Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I wonder if for an opening we could talk about just like when a good time to use a notwithstanding clause would be.
Yeah.
A nuclear bomb just fell on Toronto and we need to institute martial law. Is that a good time?
You probably wouldn't even need to, right? Like, governments can already place limits on freedoms if it can be shown to be, you know, reasonable and justified. And it is still difficult to imagine a situation where a court decision is so fundamentally wrong and destructive that you would in fact need to override it. I'm Jonathan Goldsby. I am the news editor at CanadaLand. I covered Rob and Doug Ford at City Hall for many years and am trapped in a cycle of eternal recurrence.
I'm Allison Smith, publisher of Queen's Park Today. I covered Doug Ford's PC leadership campaign, the spring election campaign, and now 2.5 months of his premiership.
But also, quite importantly, you were a Queen's Park before and therefore know how things are supposed to work in a functioning, healthy democracy that respects norms.
Yes. And this is the third episode of Wag the Doug, a pop-up podcast about Doug Ford. We make an episode whenever we feel like it or when something out of the ordinary happens, which it did this week.
Sometimes be concerned that, oh no, nothing out of the ordinary has happened for a bit.
Our podcasting career's over.
What should we do?
What should we do?
And then we wait another week, and we're discussing our fundamental freedoms.
When your skin feels nourished and glows, you radiate confidence. Osea makes giving your skin a glow up easy with their clean, clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This seaweed-powered duo features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
My direction to our House Leader and Whip is to do what it takes to ensure that this law, which has already been passed once already, is reintroduced, voted on, and passed again on the quickest possible timetable. I also want to make it clear that we're prepared to use Section 33 again in the future.
So there we have it. Despite the Superior Court ruling, Toronto will have 25 wards in October's election.
It's fantastic. Doug Ford has been premier for less than 2.5 months. And we've only done similar our third episode of this. And in that time, our discussion has moved from, like, the expansive powers of majority government to, in our second episode, really trying to explore, like, okay, they can do all these things. There are all these parallel legal challenges going on at least four different issues that we could figure out. Basically, we're talking about how there are certain limits. Thank God you can appeal to the Constitution. Well, funny we should be talking about the Constitution, because as of this week, we are sort of reminded that, oh, that doesn't necessarily matter so much either.
So how'd we get this far?
Monday morning, 8 a.m., Justice Edward Bellobaba released his decision on the various multifarious challenges to the province's Bill 5, the Better Local Government Act.
The judge in the case has ruled against the province in this dispute over the size of Toronto City Council.
In which he struck down on the basis of Section 2B of the Charter, and that it infringed upon the freedom of expression of voters and, in some cases, candidates.
Because it was enacted in the middle of the municipal election. I think he makes fairly pointed that if Doug Ford had put forward the same exact bill, but it applied to a future election, his complaints or his ruling wouldn't apply. So it was very much has to do with the timing of Bill 5.
So some basic constitutional law here. Rights are not absolute. Every right is subject to Section 1 of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which basically says rights and freedoms set out are subject only to such reasonable limits prescribed by law as can be demonstrably justified in a free democratic society. That means, in practice, governments can make laws such that your rights aren't absolute.
Like, need a driver's license to drive a car. That is taking away my right to just drive wherever I want, whenever I want. I have to drive on the road. I can't just drive on the field.
Yeah, basically, that's the entire system of laws is figuring out what are the checks on absolute freedom to actually make a society structure and function. And once again, governments have a lot of discretion to make laws that are fringe upon rights reasonably. In this case, as the judge said, the only things that the province were able to offer, either because of the limited time to prepare their case or because they simply didn't have anything else.
The only evidence, you mean?
Yeah. The only evidence they were able to file was speeches that Doug Ford and his cabinet had made in the House, as well as government press releases. And as we discussed in the last episode, political rhetoric only gets you so far in the courts. But there's this other part of the Constitution, such that the House of Commons or a provincial legislature can just literally write into a law, notwithstanding this part of the Constitution that protects this given right. We want to do this thing anyway. And that's, once again, not something you generally have to think about in your day-to-day lives, because it's only been used a handful of times in the history of the country.
And I note that most of the times it was used were back in the 80s, which was when the Charter of Rights and Freedoms was introduced.
As far as I can tell, it's only been invoked like three times seriously, and then on like a number of other occasions sort of to make a point, such as when Quebec had a sort of a long series of fuck you, we're not bound by your charter fits in the 80s. But it is remarkable that this thing has been sitting in our Constitution for 35 years, a little more than that. And goodness knows there have been almost four decades of legal scholarship on this question now. But it goes back to something we learned a lot when Rob Ford was mayor of Toronto, and something we've seen a lot since Donald Trump has been president of the United States, which is that democratic institutions depend in very large part on the implicit good faith of the people working within it. And that it is remarkably easy to just sidestep all of those things that were in place, because all the things that sort of hold our society together were not designed in a way that contemplated people using them for nefarious ends, using them for grudges, or simply not having shame. And on a 2015 episode of TVO's The Agenda that discussed sort of the origins of the Constitution how we got the notwithstanding clause, it's really remarkable to hear Jean Chrétien, who was justice minister at the time in the early 80s, put it pretty much in those terms.
Mr. Trudeau, you know, was strongly opposed to the notwithstanding clause.
He wanted that charter left alone.
Yes, he was of the notion that, you know, the court are to protect the rights, absolutely. I was of the other view, that the override was giving the people, you know, the last word.
The legislatures.
Yes, but in a difficult way. Because, you know, the notwithstanding clause, you have to understand, you have to write down, notwithstanding the equality of this and that, I want to discriminate. It's better for you to have a good argument. And on top of it.
So it's better to just have a good argument.
What's remarkable is he didn't seem to imagine that a premier or a prime minister in the future would lack the necessary shame or appreciation for these rights such that they would have really no problem writing out or explicitly stating, notwithstanding this right, we want to do this thing anyway, as though that would be some sort of nearly insurmountable hurdle that would only be broken out in the most extraordinary situations. And frankly, it's remarkable that it hasn't been abused more often.
So then this bill, when Bill 5's reintroduced this week, it's going to have the phrase, notwithstanding Ontarians' freedom of expression,
something to that
City
effect.
Of Toronto gets 25 wards.
Yes. I mean, I guess, how have you seen this manifest at Queen's Park so far? How does it work when someone comes in from outside with limited respect for or understanding of all that?
Well, I mean, it hasn't happened before, so I guess everyone's just getting used to it. I think it's interesting that, A, that Attorney General Caroline Mulroney wasn't at the press conference yesterday. She's always been painted as one of the people of reason in Doug Ford's cabinet, although she did tweet her support for this. So we're going to see all of the PC MPPs fall in line. I mean, Andrea Horvath is just as flabbergasted, I suppose, as you would be. She had a really great response when asked whether or not Doug Ford was making this change and, you know, pulling out this arsenal just for a grudge. And she couldn't help but, like, snort laugh in response to that. So I think, I mean, we're seeing from her just, and the admittance actually from her that her NDP caucus can't really do anything about this. And I think that that's because of a majority government, but that the, you know, any tools that they have in their arsenal are just so meek compared to being able to change the Constitution or use the Constitution in a way that it's not normally used to curtail freedoms. The judge's ruling, Justice Bello Baba, it was very colorful in its use of language. It had a much noted reference to crickets as was basically him saying that the government wasn't providing when didn't provide enough evidence. Yeah. Those were the crickets. Was the judiciary in this case being partisan, or can that argument be made? Because definitely pro-Ford people, and I think Ford himself, like yesterday at the press conference, he was angry, and it seemed like this was like very much a response to him thinking that the judge was making it personal. The judge also said that Ford was working more out of pique than principle, accusing Ford of acting out of anger, which is there actual evidence of that? We kind of know that. Like, it's the same thing you're talking about, like political rhetoric and what we know about Doug Ford. But was that evidence actually presented?
Well, to the extent that the province submitted that as evidence, not submitted, oh, this guy's angry, but submitted his speeches, submitted his rhetoric, whether for lack of time to build a better case or for any other evidence, that's what they gave. And so that's what he had to weigh on. It doesn't mean the decision is inherently correct. I mean, that's what appeals courts are for. And there is a decent reason to believe this could be overturned on appeal. There are certain fundamental assumptions.
We should say the province is appealing
yes.
this as well as writing a new bill that
yes.
will override it.
Yeah, and these are the sorts of issues that should be clarified in the Court of Appeal and potentially a Supreme Court, though goodness knows how the timelines for that would work. The issue here isn't the disagreement with the judge's decision, because judges make disagreeable decisions all the time. And, you know, there's a process for working that up through the courts and clarifying it. The really deeply unnerving and unsettling and upsetting thing here is Doug Ford's surprise that the judge would have an opinion at all and that that would count for something. He seemed genuinely surprised that the courts had an ability to offer a check on his powers.
Well, and he laid that out in a bunch of different ways. I mean, most frankly, when he said, I was elected, the judge was appointed.
I would never imagine in a million years a democratically elected government by 2.3 million people being overturned by one appointed judge.
So, which he did incorrectly when he said that Justice Bello Baba was appointed by Delta McGuinty, which was wrong. But calling into question the judge's credentials, I guess, on this.
Which is itself deeply unsettling.
Right. If it was just that, it would be unsettling.
Yeah. And he made it clear that he would like to have said a lot more about this judge as an, or perhaps the judge as an individual, or perhaps the judiciary system more generally.
We didn't trample on anyone's rights. And I'm kind of handcuffed to say anything else based on that. But I think people at home know exactly what I may be thinking and what our government is thinking. Democracy is when you can't say a word on any decision. That's not democracy. That's scary. That I'm sitting here handcuffed with a piece of tape over my mouth, watching what I say, that is actually scary.
So does that mean one of his handlers was just, before he walked out, do not slander the judge, do not slander the judge?
Yes. I mean, I don't know that independently, but yes, that's absolutely
that's the reading
how
of
I
it.
Interpret it, because his inclination, his instinct is to go after the individual.
I mean, I kind of want to talk a bit more about just the specifics and the justification that Ford is using himself, you know, because that's what this in a lot of ways really comes down to. And there's so many contradictions in all of the reasons that he's using to enact this. I mean, he said that their bill was vetted upside down and inside out, and every constitutional scholar agreed with it. But then, as we said, the Ministry of the Attorney General couldn't even provide, you know, more than a few pages of evidence that there was anything, you know, useful about the bill or fair about the bill. In his press conference, he's over and over again said, I respect the courts. I respect the courts, while calling into question the credentials of the judge and obviously not respecting the courts by overthrowing their decision. He said that he's doing this because he campaigned on making government smaller, which, as we know, he never campaigned on this actual decision, but is very much calling up the, as we said, 2.3 million people who voted for him, and that, you know, they're going to be the judge and jury in this decision. And that City Hall is so dysfunctional that there's no way the province can work with them, or the province doesn't want to work with this 47-person city council. And I mean, just all of those things, they don't make any sense. And they're just so riddled with errors. And if he's just going to be basing any decisions that he makes on stuff that isn't true, I mean, I guess that's where this is left, and that he's going to fight so hard based on faulty premises. I think we're going to watch his cabinet ministers start aging rapidly.
I'd certainly like to know more about that.
Which is tough, because they're not talking to the media at all. You can't get a quote out of any of them.
And like they say, he says or claims that this will be a, you know, free vote this week on whether to reintroduce the Better Local Government Act 2 or whatever they call it. Under what circumstances would a member of his government not vote in favor of it? Is there any conceivable circumstance?
I don't think so. I mean, they all voted for the bill anyways, right? They voted for the content of the bill. So unless one of them, you know, thinks that this is the constitutional crisis that, you know, some left-wing pundits are calling it, which, you know, they're under no incentive to embrace that, you know, without crossing the aisle, which doesn't seem like anybody's ready to do yet. But maybe it'll happen at some point in 4 years. But I don't think this will be the catalyst for that.
Why is it so important to have these changes in place, whatever you may think of them, for this election, to the point where you would override the Charter of Rights and Freedoms for the first time in the history of the province of Ontario?
Can we talk about John Tory just for one second?
Oh, yeah,
his reaction
mayor,
to this, well, he's mayor,
yeah.
And he's, you know, he's running again very soon, and it looks like he's going to win. Like, and usually I don't quibble with John Tory that much just because he's so boring. I don't care. But like he says,
that's
how he gets his army out there. No, is that he's still going to hold a referendum on the number of ward sizes if he wins mayorship.
Should I be returned to office as mayor, I will obtain council approval to hold a citywide referendum to finally let the people have a real say on this issue.
Which is just the most pointless thing I've ever heard, because we don't need a referendum on something that the province will have at that point appealed and had two pieces of legislation to enact.
That he is so enamored with the concept of a referendum is kind of perplexing.
Maybe the problem is that there's no good foil to Doug Ford. And there really wasn't, like, a great one to Rob Ford either. Like, Andrew Horvath, I don't think, is a good foil to Doug. And John Tory certainly isn't either. Like, is Trudeau, maybe? What politician can stand up against him and actually be able to make him look wrong?
Yeah, I mean, Andrea Horvath, just seeing her at the press conference, you get the sense that, like, her reaction is like anyone's reaction would be in that situation. Like, our reaction would be if we were there. It's like, this is horrible. I mean, it's not her fault.
No,
the
it's
system
not. No, no, it's not.
But yeah, but the question is, like, what sort of person can marshal opposition loudly and fiercely, even if that will only get you so far? Because, you can't vote Doug Ford out right now. You can't. A minority government can't take down a majority. Sorry, opposition can't take down a majority government. You can't rewrite the Constitution. Like, there's not really much. But what can you do to actually energize people?
I guess this is literally what the Ontario Liberal Party is trying to figure out right now, because they have to appoint a new leader who's hopefully going to be that person. So maybe we should placate our listeners by letting them know the sections of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms that the notwithstanding clause cannot be used to revoke. So in Section 3, it's democratic rights, which include our right to vote. It includes basically a right to routine elections every less than 5 years. Then mobility rights. Every citizen in Canada has the right to enter, remain, and leave in Canada. So Doug Ford can't take that away from us.
You can escape legally still. He can't pen you in, in theory.
But I think those voting rights are important ones to know, because what, made Bill 5 scary to people when it was first introduced, and why, as much as I said, we don't really feel like our rights or our freedoms of expression are being trampled by this, by Ford using this notwithstanding clause in this case. But what makes both of those things scarier is when a government is using its power to change how governments are run, right? So we should have some comfort in the fact that, Doug Ford can't instate himself president of Ontario for all time. There's limits to that.
That was Wag the Dog, a podcast about overriding your charter rights and freedoms and other things we hold dear.
I'm Allison Smith. You have the right to reach me on Twitter at Queen's Park Today.
And I'm Jonathan Goldsby. You can find me on Twitter at Goldsby.
Wag the Dog is produced by Kevin Sexton. Our theme song is Doug Ford's theme song, Only Better. Thanks to Nathan Burley.
This is episode 3. We plan on making more. If you want to know when they come out, either check the stream sporadically or just follow Candleland on Facebook or Twitter. If something dire and upsetting happens, maybe a couple days later, you'll hear us talking about it.
Lots of you listeners have already left us ratings and reviews in the iTunes store. So if you like the show and you want to hear more of it, keep doing that and keep listening.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.